I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, global gathering for the final time as President Joe Biden delivers remarks at the United Nations General Assembly. What he said and how world leaders are responding. Escalating attacks. As Israel and Hezbollah continue their offensives, we have analysis on the role U.S. troops will play in the region. Back to work. An update on the health of the Holy Father one day after he canceled events with flu-like symptoms. Plus, body and soul. Preparations are underway for the 2027 World Youth Day in South Korea. We have a report from Rome. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, Joe Biden addresses the United Nations General Assembly in New York for the last time as U.S. president. He optimistically told leaders from across the globe that even from the horrors of war, there is a way forward and things can get better. He urged world leaders to work together. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. President Joe Biden also said he knows many people look at the world today and see its difficulties and react with despair. He told leaders he does not and will not, adding that as leaders, quote, we don't have that luxury.
President Joe Biden delivers remarks to leaders gathered at the UN General Assembly.
I recognize the challenges from Ukraine to Gaza to Sudan and beyond. War, hunger, terrorism, brutality, record displacement of people, a climate crisis, democracy at risk.
His speech comes as Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon edge closer to all-out war, and Israel's fight against Hamas in Gaza nears the one-year mark, the president urging a ceasefire and hostage deal. And when it comes to Ukraine, President Biden said Putin's war has failed. Ukraine is still free, and emphasized NATO is more united than ever before. He also warned the world has a choice to make.
Will we sustain our support to help Ukraine win this war and preserve its freedom? Or walk away and let aggression be renewed and a nation be destroyed? I know my answer. We cannot grow weary. We cannot look away.
Later, Biden met with United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres. He also attended the Global Coalition to Address Synthetic Drug Threats. Opioids have been linked to about 800,000 deaths in the U.S. since 1999, including more than 80,000 annually in recent years, with most of those involving fentanyl, drug overdose, the leading cause of accidental death in the United States.
Too many families have suffered unbearable pain and unbearable loss. Opioids are the deadliest drug threat in our history.
Now, President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris are scheduled to hold separate meetings with Ukrainian President Zelensky in Washington this coming Thursday. Ukrainian officials were also trying to arrange meetings for Zelensky to meet with Donald Trump this week. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right. Thank you, Owen. Well, the U.S. is sending more troops to the Middle East as tensions in the region rise. The Pentagon says the addition of, quote, a small number of troops is in response to the sharp spike in violence between Israel and Hezbollah forces in Lebanon and fears of an all-out war in the region. Officials did not confirm how many U.S. troops will be sent to the Middle East, nor what their primary tasks will be upon arrival. The news comes as the State Department warns Americans to leave Lebanon. And for analysis, we turn now to Colonel Eric Buer, retired U.S. Marine and author of Ghosts of Baghdad. Colonel Buer, great to be with you. As you mentioned, the Pentagon is not disclosing how many U.S. troops are headed to the Middle East, nor what their tasks will be. That said, there are already U.S. forces in the Middle East. So what does this mean? Why send more?
Well, currently we have a significant presence with air forces and naval forces. I think they're going to see an increase in the amount of naval forces and air forces put on alert in support of any potential rise in hostilities. So this is, you know, directly in response to the Iranian proxies of the Houthis, which we're well aware of, Hamas, and now the increased tensions with Hezbollah.
Yeah, and I know you know this region very well, having several deployments to the Middle East, including in Iraq. What are your thoughts on the situation in Lebanon? I mean, how hot is it right now, and do you see it getting worse?
Well, it's going to get worse until the Iranians understand that operating through their proxies is going to be a fool's errand. And more importantly, Hezbollah should understand that. They're doing the bidding of the Iranians. The Israelis have proven they're willing to strike anywhere. That is, they've seen it in Damascus. They saw it in downtown Tehran very recently. And they, of course, they saw it in Beirut most recently when they targeted some of the 1983 Beirut bombing members and leaders. So the Israelis have a long memory, and Hezbollah is now kind of understanding that.
Yeah. Do you think we could soon see an all-out regional conflict? And if so, what do you think that will mean for our troops in the region?
So I think we are seeing an all-out regional conflict. It's a proxy war. So the three principals of Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthis only have so much bandwidth, right? They can only execute so much operationally. They don't have an air force. They don't really have any armored formations or really advanced infantry formations. So they're using asymmetric warfare against principally, and we know is the Israelis. So I don't know how much more it can be heightened. The rhetoric is going to continue to be heightened. But until the Iranians are willing to back down of their support, it's going to sit at this stalemate for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, the Pentagon is saying that it supports Israel's right to defend itself. However, it is hoping diplomacy will help to resolve the conflict. Do you think that's still possible at this point? And what will it take?
I think it's going to take a real sense of give from, in particular, from Hamas. Right, the October 7th is their 9/11. We know it's their Pearl Harbor. It's cut deep into the soul of the Israelis, and so it's going to take a lot for them to be convinced that their neighbor won't continue this type of conduct. It's gone on for generations. We know it's going to take real promise from Hamas, and it's also going to take from Hezbollah to publicly denounce the actions of many of their members, to say, listen, we have to find a realistic way to live side by side. I know it sounds very simplistic, but it has to begin with a sense of reestablishing normalcy.
Yeah, where do you see this all going?
So I think it's going to drag out for some time. The election has a big part in it. U.S. foreign policy hasn't been very strong, to say. I think the next administration is going to have a bigger impact on what's going to happen in the Middle East. And so the Israelis are certainly waiting to hear what's going to happen. And Iran's going to see if they're going to be a more hard-line stance is going to be taken against them, as we had seen in previous U.S. administrations.
Well, Colonel Bure, great to be with you as always. Thank you so much for your insights. Well, in the Democrat-controlled Senate Finance Committee, a hearing took place today titled Chaos and Control, How Trump Criminalized Women's Health Care. Republicans called the hearing nothing more than political, claiming it's the latest attempt by Democrats to keep the abortion issue front and center 6 weeks before Election Day. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with more. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. Yes, since the overturning of Roe some 2 years ago, several states have passed laws limiting or banning abortions. Democrats blame President Trump and his policies. Well, today's hearing was basically one-sided. It began with testimony from a Louisiana woman who said that her state's anti-abortion laws nearly took her life after she experienced a miscarriage.
Ultimately, it took me weeks for me to pass my pregnancy at home on my own without medical care, and I was absolutely terrified.
Also testifying, an Idaho OBGYN who says she was forced to move to Oregon, a state without abortion restrictions. She claims she's not alone.
22% of the OBGYNs have left Idaho since the bans went into effect. 55% of maternal fetal medicine doctors, the high-risk pregnancy experts, have left Idaho. 55% are gone.
One pro-life OBGYN testified the hearing is meant to misdirect the public from the true dangers of abortions.
Unregulated and dangerous abortions that not only ended the lives of over 1 million human beings last year in the United States alone, but also are harming and killing women.
Senator James Lankford agrees, noting that Democrats brought up abortion pills, claiming they're safe. But he says major complications can take place.
One in 25 women that do a chemical abortion, take those pills, have major medical complications. So while there's all this conversation that it's as safe as Tylenol, I think this hearing is going to remind people here, this is not as safe as Tylenol.
Others call the hearing a political stunt.
This is nothing but to highlight one of the key issues that the Democrats are trying to make of the election. And it serves no legislative purpose, only a political purpose, and it's a waste of taxpayers' money.
Political? Try telling that to the families of the women who have died because they couldn't get access to the medical care that they needed. Try telling that to the doctors who now live in the states where abortion care is restricted.
Well, the nonprofit group Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America did put out a statement about today's hearing, saying in part, pro-life laws are clear, yet politicians and the media are sowing confusion at women's expense. Across the nation, pro-life laws allow doctors to provide emergency care, and doctors who fail to provide necessary medical care should be held accountable. The organization adds that pro-abortion Democrats and the pro-abortion industry are trying to exploit tragedies, leaving women confused and scared. Meanwhile, the Senate tonight is voting on a pair of abortion-related bills, one that would guarantee emergency care and another using taxpayer money to pay for travel expenses to go for women to get abortions. Republicans call them show votes, and they will not pass. Tracy?
Well, Eric, I know you're also following another hearing in the U.S. House where former NFL quarterback Brett Favre made a startling admission. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that is correct. The former Green Bay Packers QB, who is Catholic, was testifying before the House Ways and Means Committee. He is advocating reform for federal welfare system to prevent fraud. Now, during that testimony, Favre actually announced that he is diagnosed and is battling Parkinson's disease. Take a listen.
Sadly, I also lost an investment in a company that I believed was developing a breakthrough concussion drug I thought would help others, and I'm sure you'll understand why it's too late for me because I've recently been diagnosed with Parkinson's.
Our prayers go out to him. Now, the Hall of Famer recently said that he believes he suffered more than 1,000 concussions during his playing career. And back in 2021, he did encourage parents to keep kids away from tackle football until the age of 14. Tracy.
All right. Thank you so much for that, Eric. We are praying for him. 20 U.S. state attorneys general are accusing a major pediatrics association of issuing, quote, misleading and deceptive guidance regarding cross-sex treatments for children. In a letter, the Republican attorneys general say the American Academy of Pediatrics has abandoned its commitment to sound medical judgment. The Republican also are demanding answers for why the AAP renewed its 2018 policy statement supporting cross-sex treatment for minors. The AAP has until October 8th to respond, and we will continue to follow this story for you. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including storm surge. We are tracking two major storms, including Tropical Storm Helene, soon to make landfall in Florida. Well, after making landfall as a Category 3 hurricane, John has now weakened to a tropical storm. The storm struck Mexico with life-threatening floods as the National Hurricane Center warns the slow pace and heavy rains could still cause flash flooding and mudslides. And as one storm weakens, another gains strength as Tropical Storm Helene forms in the Caribbean. According to the National Hurricane Center, hurricane conditions are possible in parts of Cuba and Mexico early Wednesday and Florida late Wednesday into early Thursday. The brewing storm is set to cross deep and warm waters, which will strengthen it, causing concern among government officials and forecasters. And for more on the storm, let's bring in Dr. Jill Trepanier, hurricane expert and professor at Louisiana State University. Dr. Trepanier, great to be with you as always. I know you're tracking the path of Tropical Storm Helene. What is the latest?
The latest is it is expected to rapidly intensify, just as you said. The storm has taken a little while to get itself organized, and now that it is, it'll cross that Caribbean-Yucatan space and hit extremely warm, deep water, and it's expected to turn into a bit of a monster of a storm before it makes landfall.
Yeah, and it's going to hit Florida, expected Thursday as a Category 3 hurricane. When it hits, what can folks there expect?
So I think immediately that first to keep in mind, the storm itself is moving pretty quickly, which is both good and bad news. So the good side is it will be over quickly, but I also think the winds that you'll experience will be faster than you anticipate, only because there's that combined force of the forward momentum of the storm plus the actual internal wind speed. I also think, because I've seen it in the past, that there's this reverse surge that could be potential in that space near Tampa Bay. And I've seen people go out into the waters there, surprised by this lack of water in the system. But please remember not to do things like this, because we might see that force come backward, right? So really being away from the coast, being mindful of where you're sleeping in the wee hours, as it may make landfall then, because trees may fall, power lines, things like this, to try to protect yourself.
Yeah, that's really great advice right there. And I know the National Hurricane Center has designated the storm a potential tropical cyclone 9. What does that mean?
Well, so that's a great question. I think we think about these storms as they grow. All systems are considered tropical cyclones. And as we get to certain wind speed levels, that's when we give them names and other designations, such as tropical storm, hurricane, major hurricane, et cetera. And so if we think about what, you know, that major signature means, we're thinking about winds as it kind of develops into that major system.
Yeah, and I know this is the second hurricane to hit Florida in a little over a month. How do you think this one will compare to Hurricane Debby?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, this storm is unique in that where its trajectory is really just this straight shot northward from where it is right now. And it's really a weak system right now, or rather kind of quickly growing. But I think we're going to see it rapidly intensify in a way that surprises most people. And so I think we want to be mindful of what that signature looks like as a storm that's actively building in intensity as it's making landfall, as opposed to some level of weakening or a weakness nearing that coast.
Yeah, another thing I want to touch on and be sure to mention this, Florida isn't the only state that's going to be impacted by Helene. Mm-hmm. I know a number of other southeastern states are going to feel its effects, including Georgia and the Carolinas. What are folks there expected to see?
Well, that's also a great question. So those states don't typically, particularly Georgia, get landfalling direct storms, but they do see these events like Hurricane Michael that pass through the panhandle of Florida and still make their way into the actual state with some pretty extreme wind speeds. Typically what we see in those states is severe wind damage. So I will reiterate this idea of when you sleep or when we're in a place where you might be out on the road, be sure you're mindful of where those large trees are, or if you can, of course, be inside to stay away from those types of flying debris. Now, the storm, because it's moving quickly, should decay quickly as well, which is also great news. So hopefully by the time it gets to the Carolinas, we're seeing some scattered rain and a little bit of, you know, gusty winds, but nothing too overly severe.
All right. Well, Dr. Trepanier, thank you so much for coming on, explaining all this to us. We're praying for everybody in its path.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you
be
so safe. Much. Thank you. Well, up next on EWTN News Nightly, Take Courage, a report from Rome as work begins on the 2027 World Youth Day in South Korea. Sri Lanka dissolves the country's parliament. President Dissanayake also calls for elections to take place in mid-November in a move he had promised during the campaign. His party currently has only 3 seats in the 225-member parliament. New elections could help him form a cabinet. Our church leaders in Mexico are sounding the alarm after a report says nearly 400 children have disappeared in just one state. The findings date back to October of 2018. The church issued an alert to parents and priests asking them to take, quote, all necessary security measures. This comes amid a confirmed report that a gang is dedicated to child theft. Pope Francis resumes his normal work schedule one day after canceling his meetings. Today, the Holy Father met with church leaders from Mozambique. The 87-year-old appears on track for his visit to Belgium and Luxembourg later this week. The Holy Father canceled his meetings yesterday while suffering from what was described as a slight flu-like condition. Soon after returning from the two-nation trip, Pope Francis will preside over the Synod on Synodality next month. Well, finally tonight, the Vatican has unveiled the theme and logo of the next International World Youth Day, which will be held in Seoul, South Korea, in 2027. And preparation is already underway. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigren has more.
The World Youth Days are considered one of John Paul II's most beautiful inventions. È stata istituita la giornata mondiale della gioventù.
Since the event was established in 1985, hundreds of thousands of young pilgrims from across the world gather every 2 to 3 years for the international celebration. At the end of the World Youth Day in Lisbon in Portugal last year, the Holy Father announced that the global youth event would return in Asia for the first time in 30 years.
Será in Corea del Sur, in Seoul.
While the next World Youth Day is not due to take place until 2027, preparations are already underway in the Vatican and South Korea.
Oh yes, we have very good relation with government and parliament, and from time to time, the people, normal people, I mean, not Christians, the curiosity about the WYD 2027. So I think it will be very successfully done.
South Korea has nearly 6 million Catholics, which represent 11% of the population. This makes the country the first non-Christian nation to ever host a large Catholic youth event. What is unique about the Catholic Church in Korea is that it was born and developed under the initiative of lay scholars and intellectuals, not missionaries. Over the centuries, Korean Christians suffered violent persecutions. In 2014, 124 martyrs were beatified by Pope Francis during a 5-day trip to South Korea.
Thanks to the martyrs, we have a very strong faith among the Catholic faithful in Korea. Every time we are in front of any difficulty, we remember the martyrdom and the martyrs' spirituality. Like that, we can sustain our faith.
Take courage, I have already conquered the world, will be the theme of the upcoming youth event. The phrase, which is taken from Jesus' farewell discourse in the Gospel of John, aims at bringing hope to all young people to give a courageous witness to Christ in the world.
Before in Krakow, I experienced the energy and eager of the young people, Catholic or non-Catholic. It makes people be hopeful, and it is very courage to people to eager to this event.
The auxiliary bishop of Seoul also presented the logo of the 2027 World Youth Day, a red and blue cross, the colors of the Korean flag, created in the style of traditional Korean art.
Through the Bishops' Conference of Korea.
He explained that the red symbolizes the blood of the courageous martyrs. The blue, which represents the vitality of young people, symbolizes the call of God. In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.